broadcasting live from Forward Observer Central Command in Austin, Texas. It's the man always out front on the issues. You're listening to Out Front with Samuel Culver.
Hello and good afternoon and welcome to Out Front with Samuel Culper. I am your host, Samuel Culper, and I'm coming to you live from Forward Observer Central Command here in Austin, Texas. On today's show, I'm talking about a blue sweep of for the Biden administration. I'm going to talk about the far left and law and order, and some of these Democrats are, I think, really starting to regret what they've done over the past couple of years. I'll explain why that's the case. And I want to also make a few points about what's happening with the far-left insurgency, and then with any time remaining in this 30 minutes that I have with you today, I want to talk about off-model risk, and I want to paint a scenario that virtually nobody sees coming, or at least I haven't seen it anywhere yet, that could really throw November for a loop. I mean, this would be like HBO-level drama. It's not likely to occur, but it's also not outside the realm of possibility. But first, I have a mea culpa. I did Monday's show, and about halfway through, the mowers came, and it just got too loud in here for me to record. And then, of course, you know, they were here for like 30 minutes. So I just got frustrated, and then I didn't finish. And then I accidentally deleted the file. Sorry. So at any rate, I really need to build a recording booth in here because we moved into this new office. We needed the space. We're growing the team. And so in this new place, I don't have the same recording booth that I had, but we're going to try to build a soundproof recording studio so that these Monday, Wednesday, and Friday podcasts can have very good sound. By the way, if you support this podcast via Patreon, or you're a Forward Observer subscriber, thank you, because you are going to allow us to build this podcast booth. If you want to support this show, you can via Patreon. You can go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/outfront. Patreon supporters are going to help get this podcast booth built. Any amount helps, and I will give Patreon supporters some photos as well as we make progress. Or if you want to receive my daily intel briefs, and also listen to our daily early warning podcast, that's Monday through Friday, then you can become a Forward Observer subscriber at forwardobserver.com/subscribe. All right, here's the headline. Business world braces for blue sweep. So says The Hill. Here's what the author wrote. Quote, Wall Street and business groups are bracing for the possibility of a blue sweep in Washington that could leave Democrats in charge of the White House and both chambers of Congress. Such a scenario could lead to sweeping policy changes affecting taxes, regulations, coronavirus relief, and other economic policies, so reads the article. Well, something I've been pointing out in my early warning briefs is that financial conditions for corporations have practically never been better. If Biden wins, corporate taxes are going up, and all sorts of regulations from the EPA and the SEC and the IRS, all sorts of stuff, coming right back, taxes going right back up. And I hear all these pundits and some financial analysts who say that the market will soar if Biden gets elected. As a matter of fact, in this article, they quoted some financial person somewhere that said, oh, it's probably going to be a good thing for the markets if Biden gets elected. Well, if that does become the case, if Biden gets elected and markets go up, I mean, let me tell you why this might actually happen. Conventional wisdom says that the regulatory environment for businesses is only going to get more difficult under Biden. I think that's absolutely correct. They're already signaling. Biden-Harris, they're already talking about bringing back all this Obama-era stuff. And by the way, so this is the real crux of this matter. You know why big business loves all these regulations and hoops people have to jump through, businesses especially, because they can afford the army of attorneys and accountants who can ensure compliance, spending $100 million or $10 million on all this stuff, that's a piece of cake. But little guys, small businesses, trying to grow, trying to become mid-sized businesses, and mid-sized businesses themselves, they can't afford it. They can't afford that level of hurdle. They cannot afford an army of attorneys and accountants to ensure all this wacky compliance with all these regulations. And so that's one way that big business uses government to build monopolies, and it's all coming back if Biden wins in November. I saw this video. Don Lemon over at CNN, by the way, that's what Tucker Carlson calls him. Don Lemon over at CNN sounds pretty concerned that Biden may, his campaign chances may be being hurt due to all this rioting. Don Lemon warns Democrats that all these riots are actually hurting them in the polls. Here's what he had to say.
I do think that this, what you said, what's happening in Kenosha is a Rorschach test for the entire country. And I think this is a blind spot for Democrats. I think Democrats are ignoring this problem or hoping that it will go away. And it's not going to go away. And so, unless someone comes up with a solution over the next 73 days or 70, so however many days.
68 days.
So it's not going to, the problem is not going to be fixed by then. But what they can do, and I think maybe Joe Biden may be afraid to do it. I'm not sure. Maybe he won't. Maybe he is. He's got to address it. He's got to come out and talk about it. He's got to do a speech like Barack Obama did about race. He's got to come out and tell people that he is going to deal with the issue of police reform in this country, and that what's happening now is happening under Donald Trump's watch, on Donald Trump's watch. And when he is the president, Kamala Harris is the vice president, then they will take care of this problem. But guess what? The rioting has to stop. Chris, as you know and I know, it's showing up in the polling. Mm-hmm. It's showing up in focus groups. It is the only thing, it is the only thing right now that is sticking. And the Democrats tonight stuck with that, right? And they also stuck with the theme that you said, the coronavirus. You got coronavirus and you have Kenosha.
You know what that reminds me of? If you riot, you got to stop. If I riot, I got to stop. You're right. You got to stop. I'll play that clip at the end of the show. Listen, the far left is a monster of the Democrat Party's own making. And I will tell you exactly how we got here. Last year, a year and a half ago now, Foreign Affairs, the magazine from the Council on Foreign Relations, a very informative issue. As a matter of fact, I still have this issue, and I might even take a picture of it for everybody. They had their spring issue featured articles with titles like The New Nationalism and A New Americanism and Building a Better Nationalism. And it's all about New America. And I've said numerous times, look, the culture war, low-intensity conflict, all this stuff, it is over. Old America versus New America. That's who is at war here. And by war, I don't mean primarily armed conflict, although we are seeing more of that. I mean political, cultural, diplomatic, economic, informational warfare. Low-intensity conflict is right now being waged between old America and this new America. In this magazine issue from Foreign Affairs, the most egregious article was written by Stacey Abrams. She lost the Georgia governor's race in 2018. She's not going anywhere. She wanted to be a vice presidential pick. As a matter of fact, earlier this year I talked about she was profiled, I think it was over at the New Yorker, about, oh, Stacey Abrams is going to be president one day. Oh, ever since I was a little girl, I've wanted to be president. Whatever she said. Like, the woman wants power. It's not about solving problems. She has her eyes set on the presidency. She's not going anywhere. She wrote this article entitled E Pluribus Unum with a question mark, questioning whether this is true, out of many one. is that really true? She says it's... I'll tell you exactly what she says. She pens a full-throated defense of identity politics. Here's what she wrote. Quote, Americans must thoughtfully pursue an expanded, identity-conscious politics. New, vibrant, noisy voices represent the strongest tool to manage the growing pains of multicultural coexistence. I'm going to read that to you again. New, vibrant, noisy voices represent the strongest tool to manage the growing pains of multicultural coexistence. New, vibrant, noisy voices. New, vibrant, noisy voices create friction among the country's tectonic plates, race, ethnicity, class, politics, ideology. And that is why we are getting the earthquake we are getting today. There are tectonic shifts happening right now. Demographic changes, new voting patterns. Those are the tectonic plates of this country shifting, and that is why we are going to get an earthquake that could begin, who knows, it could start tomorrow. Certainly, the period between November and January is, you know, looking back, we might say, look, sometime between there, that's when this thing really kicked off. By supporting this anti-fascist movement for so long, since 2017 at least, actually since 2016, and ignoring the real dangers of leftist fascism, Democrats have let this monster get out of control. And Don Lemon is worried about it. And lots of Democrats are worried that, oh, the rioting is helping President Trump. Because no one wants to see businesses burned down, or no one wants to see these businesses looted. The average American voter wants this to end, like yesterday. And a lot of people warned. They said, hey, look, this anti-fascist stuff, sure, yeah, Trump's a fascist, okay. But you got to come out against this anti-fascist violence, because it doesn't end with people wearing MAGA hats. And it still hasn't ended. People don't even wear MAGA hats today. Actually, there's a 7-year-old kid just the other day. Police arrested two adult females and charged them with like a battery or something like that, endangering a minor, because they apparently pushed this 7-year-old kid and they snatched the MAGA hat off his head. I can't tell you the last time I saw someone wear a MAGA hat. Actually, I can. I went up to the Trump rally in Dallas a few months ago. Was it earlier? No, it was late last year, actually. That's the last time. 6, 8, 10 months. So, point is, we were saying, man, it's not going to stop with MAGA hats. It's not going to end. And Democrats ignored it. Chris Hayes, who is a commentator over at MSNBC. By the way, I've been watching a lot of MSNBC because I just keep it on here at the office. I put it on mute and I just watch the stuff that they cover. And then, you know, last night I was watching Fox News version of the Republican National Convention. Holy cow, this is like night and day. It's like, what a change. What a shift. At any rate, Chris Hayes, has his own show over at MSNBC in the mornings. He watched a video. Or no, I'm sorry. Chris Hayes is in the evenings. He watched a video. And I'll read you the description of what this video is. This is the reporter who took this video. The reporter writes, quote, in a scene that played out several times Monday, a Black Lives Matter protest that began in Columbia Heights confronted white diners outside D.C. restaurants chanting, white silence is violence, and demanding white diners show their solidarity. So this group of BLM activists, this group of BLM activists are attacking this white woman who would not raise her fist in solidarity with Black Lives Matter. You may have seen this video, or you may have seen a couple of videos, because there's several floating out there. And they're screaming at this woman, a group of people, and they start chanting. And some of them are yelling obscenities at her in this other video that I watched. It looks like some couple, maybe a boyfriend and girlfriend, I don't know, maybe some guy and this girl that he likes are just out at a date, on a date. They're sitting at a restaurant outside of some restaurant. And this BLM, this Black Lives Matter protester, comes over to them. And she's like yelling in this guy's face, like, raise your hand in solidarity. And he won't do it. And actually, this woman, this white woman, who they're chanting, trying to get her to raise the solidarity, she told a reporter later, she told this guy, she was like, hey, I've been out marching with these Black Lives Matter protesters, but I don't want to be coerced into solidarity. I agree with them. I support what they are doing. I support what they stand for. I just don't want to be coerced into, I don't want to be forced to raise my hand. She says, I will do it voluntarily. But when they started demanding it, that's when she started to push back. And I hope she realizes that this is not about getting people to support. This is about power. This is about forcing people to do things. This is about intimidating or browbeating people into submission. So imagine this. Imagine you're sitting out at a restaurant. It's a nice evening. It's a nice 72 degrees outside. There's a gentle breeze. You're eating at an Italian restaurant. And here comes marchers coming up. Here's what the scene sounded like. Listen towards the end of this. Put your fist up. You hear that guy at the very end of that thing. No justice, no peace. If we don't get it, shut it down. That's what the crowd is chanting here. And they're not, this woman is not wearing a MAGA hat. She's not campaigning for President Trump. She's not attending a KKK rally. It's a liberal white woman sitting down trying to eat dinner, being accosted by people who are screaming in her face. By the way, Jesse Kelly, he's a conservative, he's a Marine, a former Marine, and or ex-Marine, I don't know, whatever. And he also runs a radio show, but on Twitter he says, in this video, there's a guy that's like leaning over, screaming in this woman's face, and Jesse Kelly pointed out correctly, this is a male who has not learned, I forget exactly what he said, but basically, you meet people sometimes and you're like, that dude has never been punched square in the face. That guy has never been punched in the face. Like, he's never learned his lesson. Actually, in Austin a couple years ago, I got into a fight because this dude would not leave me alone. I looked straight in his face. I said, I bet you've never been punched in the face before. And he says, nope, I never have. I said, yeah, I can tell. At any rate, I'm actually at my friend's bachelor party. Well, at any rate, he keeps screwing with me. I try to ignore him. Like, yeah, whatever, cool. And anyway, he ends up spitting on me, and I just stand up and start wailing on this dude. And then he gets thrown out of the bar because the bouncer saw that he spit on me. Because after we started yelling at each other, at any rate, that dude got punched square in the face, and I bet you he thinks twice before he starts screwing with somebody else, and he's lucky that it was me, that I have such a patient demeanor. So at any rate, MSNBC's Chris Hayes comments on this video. He watches this video. He says, IMHO, in my humble opinion, this is not a good tactic. Okay, so there's no condemnation. There's no admonishment. Absolutely nothing to dissuade these people from their violence. Because remember, words are violence to these people. Loud words by yelling, they're committing violence. Looting and burning down property, not violence. Words are violence, so they say. And so we get into this feedback loop, and it's this positive feedback loop for these activists and also for the arsonists and the looters, because nobody's putting their foot down and stopping these people in their tracks, except for this kid in Kenosha, Wisconsin last night who just happened to stop a couple dudes dead in their tracks. The left in general, be they mainstream liberals who didn't push back against the anti-fascists in 2016 and 2017, to the people who supported the anti-fascist movement actively, everyone who did at the political level, at the social and cultural level, all those people who did absolutely nothing to stop what happened in Minneapolis, to stop what's going on in Portland and Seattle, Chicago, Kenosha, and all over the country. The left has fed this beast. And I'm talking about liberals who didn't push back and leftists, because Democrats now, they come in a multitude of flavors. But we do have to make a distinction between liberals and actual leftists. There is a difference. We can't pretend that there's not. They have fed this beast, or they have ignored it. Most of them have not worked against it. But they did work against the people who tried to stop it. Because the Trump administration deployed federal troops to Portland, and all hell broke loose because all these people started crying, fascism, fascism. They won't let these people try to burn down a police building. They won't let these people loot and attack police officers. People are getting arrested. They won't let us... Oh, what was that BLM demand? Allow Black Lives Matter activists to protest how they feel or something like that? Or protest how they feel is appropriate to protest? And now CNN's Don Lemon is complaining about it. Because they realize, you know, this is not a really good look for us. We love the violence, but it's hurting us in the polls. We love when conservatives are getting attacked. Conservatives are literally Hitler. But it's starting to hurt us in the polls. So just wait until we win the election. Just wait. Let's win the election, and then we'll get government to join you. And that's, for a lot of these people, look, I know Biden says he's a centrist and that he's going to be the president of all America. But he's going to stack his administration so deep with leftists that they're going to form their own Council of People's Commissars, just like Lenin's cabinet. And I'm telling you, you thought the Obama administration was Marxist. Just wait to see who Biden picks for his administration. And then look at the next Democrat who replaces Biden. And this is it. Over on Twitter, Tim Pool says, go out and buy guns and ammo if you can. We're long past that point. You should have been doing that sometime between 1 and 10 years ago or longer. You should have been stacking it deep. It's going to be a nightmare of a decade. I mean, is it absolutely going to be a train wreck of a decade? And this is why I keep pushing. This is why I keep pushing people. Build your intel networks. Build your communications networks locally. There's a friend of mine texted me the other day. Near where I live, like maybe 5 or 10 minutes away, there was a guy who had an anti-fascist flag. You know how people, they'll hang up their Marine Corps flags or their, Trump flags or hang an American flag out there. Well, this guy had an Antifa flag, an anti-fascist flag. And someone drove by and took a picture of it and sent it to that guy. And that guy sent it to me. This, when I say build your intelligence network, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Because I can only be one place at one time. But if I have 20, 50 plus collectors out there, all of a sudden, wow, do I have access to a lot of information. I don't even go to that neighborhood. I have no reason to be over there. I've never seen it. But when you build a grapevine, you get to eat the fruit. So build your grapevines locally. All right, with the time that we have left, by the way, the left, speaking of left, the left is, they are doing that. They've organized very well. And by the way, I have this, I don't know if it's not really a conspiracy theory, but you know when Facebook, like a week ago, deleted all the 3% groups and a bunch of militia groups, and they didn't just delete these Facebook groups and Facebook pages. They deleted individual accounts of the people, some of the people in these groups. And the first thing I thought was, wow, they just cut communication for a bunch of these groups. Because Facebook, I'm telling you, for a lot of these groups, Facebook was their primary means of communication. It may have been their only means of communication and organizing. And Facebook just chopped that right in half. But all this is to say, if you don't have local communication, you're really going to be hurting when we need it. Well, with the time we have left, 5 minutes or so that we have left, let's talk about off-model risk and what could conceivably happen in November. And I'm not saying that it's likely, but we clearly can't discount it. And I say what could happen in November, but, you know, November, December, into early January. Off-model risk. This is an off-model risk. So in terms of losses, think about this. In terms of losses, what do you think the worst day in casino history was? Casinos are well known for taking money or, you know, making money off their guests. The house always wins, as they say. Turns out that's not always true. By far, the worst loss in casino history was well over $100 million. In 2003, a Siegfried and Roy show was ended when a performing tiger mauled illusionist Roy Horn. The show had this multi-million dollar show ended, plus there were lots of other damages, and it cost the casino big time. Risk managers at this casino, they'd taken out lots of insurance policies on the house. Specifically with the show, they took out an insurance policy in case a tiger mauled an audience member, but they failed to consider this off-model risk, a black swan. They failed to consider what would happen if the tiger mauled one of the performers. And Nassim Taleb talks about this in his book, Black Swan. That's where I get this concept from, this story as well. And in the book, Taleb discusses this other off-model risk. While trying to avoid losses at the betting table, which is what casinos do, one casino nearly lost its operating license after an employee failed to turn in some forms to the state licensing office. That's another off-model risk. These risk managers were just absolutely consumed with win rates and loss rates. They didn't factor in the potential that their casino could be shut down due to an error to file a few forms. As opposed to on-model risks, risks that we can model, these off-model risks constitute potentially foreseeable events that were never considered. And I wrote something in this morning's early warning report that is an off-model risk. By the way, if you don't get my daily report, you should. You can sign up at forwardobserver.com/subscribe. Here's what I wrote to subscribers this morning. In a recent interview, former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton said that Joe Biden shouldn't concede, and instead he should wait it out through the courts. He should wait for the election to make its way through the courts. She said in this interview, quote, Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances because I think this is going to drag out. And eventually, I do believe he will win if we don't give an inch and if we are as focused and relentless as the other side is, she continues. We've got to have a massive legal operation, and I know the Biden campaign is working on that, end quote. Well, this does appear to be the most likely scenario. Both sides have been investing heavily for a legal ground game. We previously reported that the Biden campaign had hired over 600 attorneys and that the campaign has been deploying some of them to key states in order to organize legal efforts for after Election Day. The Trump campaign as well, they've hired legal staff to pursue or defend against recount efforts and a host of other potential problems in these key states. As Clinton lays out, both campaigns share this expectation that the election is going to be heavily contested. And as much as I hate repeating this conventional wisdom, this thing that, oh, it's everywhere now, short of a landslide victory, it really does, it's likely that it's going to be days or weeks before results are officially decided or officially announced. But here's the plot twist. Number one, it goes to the Supreme Court, right? Not too out there. It went to the Supreme Court in 2000. So we might get this 5-4 split decision, which, by the way, could go either way, knowing Chief Justice John Roberts. But you might get this 5-4 split decision for a conservative majority. And that is certainly going to rile progressives because they think that Justice Gorsuch is an illegitimate juror because of the whole Merrick Garland thing. But here is the major plot twist. Let's say that an illness, or worse, befalls Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg sometime between the decision in, say, mid-December. Or maybe a conservative justice. Something happens to a conservative justice, and now you've got a, well, if you have a conservative justice, now you no longer have this conservative majority on the court. And let's just say there is an empty seat. Someone has to step down. In a case that is going to be probably the biggest Supreme Court case in the history of the Supreme Court, I would imagine. Just because of the follow-on effects, i.e., the potential for armed conflict or armed political violence. Does the Senate, or does the Republican Senate, swiftly confirm a replacement before the Supreme Court makes a ruling? I don't know all the ins and outs of the Supreme Court and, you know, who can sit and who can't, and when they can rule on a case and when they can't. And that certainly is a left-field scenario, but look, this is 2020. I'm pretty much open to anything. I'm open to freaking Godzilla popping out of the coast of Japan at this point in the year 2020. So that does it for today's show. Thanks for listening. I'm just saying, this year could get a whole lot crazier. Thanks for listening to the show. I appreciate your support. I'll be back with the podcast on Friday at 2 p.m. Until then, be well and stay out front.
Somebody that doesn't have a weapon on them, you go to jail. You know what? If I kill somebody, I gotta go to jail. You gotta go to jail too.